Hello there and welcome to the First Man Photography Podcast, or what from now on is going to be known as the Raw Room Podcast. I will let you know more about that name change in a moment, but today's episode is going to be a conversation with the legend that is Charlie Waite. He came on my YouTube channel a little while ago and we filmed a video together. It was very well received. It was an amazing day out in the Yorkshire Dales with Charlie Waite. For me, there was a YouTube video like that I did a few months ago, so you can go and check that out if you've not seen it yet. But I filmed a lot of footage during the course of the day and I had to narrow it down to about a, 15 minute vlog in the end. And I also sat down with Charlie, some of which was in the video, but we sat down and we talked for about half an hour. And I had to cut that up to just for time, basically, in the YouTube video. But today, I want to share that entire conversation with you. It's about 21, 22 minutes long. But if you've seen the video, you will know that Charlie is just really well-spoken. He's got some really interesting thoughts on photography. It's not really an interview. It's just more of a kind of sitting down and having a conversation about various aspects of photography. So I will play that for you very, very shortly, and I think you'll get an awful lot out of it. Before we do that, though, I just wanted to give you a quick update about some of the things that I am doing at the moment, because I've had a little break from YouTube for various reasons, part of which I felt slightly burnt out in terms of, not in terms of the hard work or creating content, but in terms of the reaction and the actual pressure to upload things to YouTube and just the whole YouTube algorithm. I made a video about it a little while ago about the problems with photography on YouTube. But it's all just got to me just a little bit. And also, although I've been working really hard, I've not been putting as much time into YouTube. With September now almost done, we're getting into the autumn, so it's always a great time for landscape photography. So I'm looking forward to getting out there a bit more often. I've also not been out doing landscape photography because me and my family and my wife were trying to just save a bit of money. So I got rid of my car, and so I've been without a car basically for the last couple of months, pretty much over the whole summer, which has been a bit more restrictive. I wanted to survive for as long as possible without one, but it just hasn't really worked out. So I'm on the verge of buying a new one, and I wanted a vehicle that was going to do everything for me, that it can be a family car, I can sleep in the back of it if I need to, so a longer estate-type car was something I was looking at. But I also want to get out and about across some, say, snowy Scottish road during the winter in the very north of Scotland, so I wanted four-wheel drives. I think I've found an estate car with four-wheel drive that can also double up as a normal family car by not being a van. So I think, hopefully, that will come to fruition next week, and then I'll be off again doing lots more vlogs that will go out on YouTube. But one of the thoughts I've been having recently is that for a long time, and this includes people like Charlie Waite, part of what a professional landscape photographer has had to do is to be somewhat involved in education, because there isn't always a huge amount of money in landscape photographs. Yes, we can sell prints, we can do bespoke works and commissions and commercial work and things, but these days that's getting more and more difficult, and it's no different for me. And education, I am very, very passionate about education. Both my parents were teachers. I did some training of new people when I used to be in the police. So it's something that's always been very close to me and I'm very passionate about. And I also am quite passionate about how education is going to progress into the future, because the pure accumulation of knowledge that we give to kids is not necessarily what we need anymore, because you've got all that information on Google or via a search engine at your fingertips anyway. So it's more about, I think, about trying to teach people how to do things and why to do things and different ways of thinking about things. And that's kind of what I'm passionate about with the way that I convey the information that I give over. Because I want you to get as much out of my content as possible. People tell me they're inspired, they learn things, and that's all great. And I just want you to get the absolute most out of it. But in order to do that, the free model that YouTube offers is great, but it isn't sustainable for me particularly. And I know probably for quite a lot of other photographers on YouTube as well, it's challenging. Because whilst there are a lot of people into photography, the genre isn't vast like the gaming industry. So it's a limited pool. People like Peter McKinnon have obviously got right to the top of that and are doing really well. But there are other YouTubers, particularly in America, that have been doing it for a long, long time, and it's just never, ever blown up. So there's lots of other things that we've got to do. So I like the free stuff because I always wanted the information that I give across to be accessible. But one option that I have as a landscape photographer is to do tours and workshops. And they're great, but they are at an absolute premium. To be honest, there isn't really any better form of learning landscape photography, I don't think, because it takes care of where you actually need to be, about scouting. You don't need to do any scouting because your leader or guide is going to show you that. You then get, hopefully, a really good tutor who can teach you things about photography as well. And landscape photography, it's just a holiday, it's a trip, you get to socialize a bit. And I think it's just a great way to spend time doing landscape photography and learning landscape photography, but it does come at an absolute premium. So it was at that point that I then decided I wanted to launch the Raw Room to be able to offer something at a much, much more reasonable price. Now, the Raw Room's been going for a few months now, and it's £5.99 a month, and you get all my kind of tutorial content. So I'm trying to offer something for everyone. So there's the free content on YouTube, and now this podcast. There is the sort of very affordable Raw Room at £5.99 a month with really high quality tutorials and masterclasses and things like that, and lots more that's on there. And then also I'm offering the premium tours and workshops because I love doing that. The clients that do that love it as well. And I just, like I say, I want to be able to afford all of that now, or to deliver all of that. Now, when I launched the Raw Room, one of the things I wanted to have was a podcast where I could tell people just some of my thoughts and tell them about the Raw Room. But it just didn't quite make sense keeping it behind the paywall because a lot of people wanted to get the podcast through their normal app. I wanted to keep it behind the paywall because that's people paying for that. But it just hasn't worked out. So what I am doing is now bringing the Raw Room photography podcast out from behind the paywall so everybody can listen to it for free. But I'm going to do that by replacing my older First Man Photography podcast because that's already got a reasonably good subscriber base. So I don't have to start from scratch, and it will be exactly the same as the stuff I was starting to build on the First Man Photography podcast. I've been into podcasts for pretty much since it started because I was always a big fan of Apple. I got an iPod very early on. So as soon as podcasting became a thing on iPods and stuff, I got into it with some of the very early podcasts. And it's always been something for the last 4 or 5 years that I wanted to do and to put out there because I think it's just it's a great way of consuming content because you can be doing something else whilst you're listening to me ramble on for a bit. And I think that's just, it's really nice, and it sort of fits in with what is a busy lifestyle for almost everybody. Now, I'm also doing the Photo Nerds. So it's been at one point I've had three podcasts, and it's just not feasible. So I'm bringing the Raw Room Photography podcast outside from behind the paywall, and that's now replacing the First Man Photography podcast one. So I hope you can appreciate why I'm doing that. What it will also let me do is tell people about the content that's dropping into the Raw Room on a almost weekly basis. And one of the problems I've got at the moment is the Raw Room is built on a system that you can just kind of subscribe to. It's not a bespoke system that I've built myself, although I have done some tweaking to it. And part of that is that there isn't an app. I don't have an app for your phone at the moment. So there isn't really a very natural way to listen to the podcast other than actually going to the webpage. So by bringing it out from behind the paywall, I can put it into iTunes and Spotify and everywhere you normally listen to your podcasts. And it will also help me notify people who are already subscribers to The Raw Room of some of the new content that's on there, because that's another slight problem I'm having, because I don't want to keep bombarding people with emails. So I just want to notify them when new content comes along. So I think this podcast will be part of that. So I hope you appreciate that. If you are not subscribed to The Raw Room, it won't take up much of the time, but it might also tempt you to give it a go and subscribe for a month or two just to see what it's all about. And if you do that, it's not going to break the bank at £5.99 a month. And I think, anyway, you could get quite a lot out of it. All you need to do is to find The Raw Room is go to firstmanphotography.com /Raw Room, and you'll find it there. It's raw-room. At the end. So firstmanphotography.com/raw-room, and you'll find it there. Eventually I will move it to somewhere more suitable with a bespoke system as it builds. That's how it goes at the moment. This podcast is not just going to be about The Raw Room, not at all. That's just going to be a very small portion of it. This podcast is going to be original content. It's going to be thoughts that pop into my head sometimes, and I just need to share it with you or record it or let you know about it. It's going to be interviews and conversations like the conversation you're about to hear with Charlie Waite. I just want to maximize the experiences I have, or maximize the opportunities to record and share the experiences I have, like some of these conversations, because I find them fascinating, and I think hopefully you will as well. So that's the sort of move from the First Man Photography podcast to the Raw Room podcast, and bringing the Raw Room podcast out of the paywall. But today, we are talking to, like I said, Charlie Waite, the legend Charlie Waite, the founder of Landscape Photographer of the Year and Light and Land. He's such a good guy. He's looked after me very nicely. He came up to Yorkshire to see me. We went out for the day. He's involved me in his company. I'm now a leader for Light and Land. And just amazingly, and I'm still pinching myself that this is happening, we have just launched, or we've just put out, a tour of the Lake District that Charlie and I are going to be running together. So there's 12 places on that tour. It starts on the 31st of March. I think it's a three-day tour of the Lake District in 2020. So you can head over to Light and Land, check that out. I'll put a link somewhere in the description of this podcast so you can find that. Head over there, have a look. And I genuinely think it's going to be 3 days that if you come on it, that you will never, ever forget, because he's an inspiring guy, and we'll have a mixture of sort of learning from me, learning from Charlie. And I think that sort of I think that's going to be really good. I can't wait. It's going to be, I'm certain it's going to be a very special occasion, and I would love to have some of you along. So please do check that out. But without further ado, I will go into this conversation I had with Charlie. Like I said, it's about 20 minutes long, so I really hope you do enjoy it, and I would love to see you on the next episode of the Raw Room Photography Podcast. That lens actually is one that I've reviewed, and I gave it a pretty bad review because it's a terrible lens. Yeah, it's plasticky.
Oh dear,
it's not sharp. It's a terrible distortion, really soft at the edges, but I've got a bit of a love-hate relationship with it now, because there isn't anything else that does that for the Canon cameras.
Oh my word.
So it's got the wide, the 10mm wide angle.
Yes, yes.
Which is good for when I'm holding the camera, yes. So I'm not right in your face. It's also,
yes.
It's got image stabilisation on it as well, which just takes a little bit of the wobble off things. And I've beaten it up, as you can. I mean, I've dropped it a few times, as you can see.
But it's
see,
still going.
Yeah, it got saturated, and I just stuck it by a radiator, and it.
And it was all right.
It dried out and worked again.
I can quite see 10-18. Yes.
And it's good. Really cheap as well, so it's.
That's good.
Yeah, I've got that's good. A bit of light over there.
Yeah,
again, now.
I mean, you've got some output, and I've been seeing some of your work, and you reach far across the nation. Well done, you.
Yeah.
Well done.
Yeah.
Because you live and breathe, a bit like me, you live and breathe your craft.
I think like, it's like what you were saying earlier, I was telling you earlier, is it's just, it's efficiency.
Yes.
So doing it in one take helps.
Yes.
Like, I think you're obviously a natural at that. But
yes.
Yeah, doing it in one take and getting a workflow going to the point where not one thing isn't detrimental to the other. Because I think a lot of people, when they start vlogging, they find that their pictures aren't as great, or
yes,
it's really difficult to get everything done. And that's not, I'm nothing special. It's just a case of getting a practiced workflow going,
sure,
to make that work.
Yes.
So you can then still focus a bit on your actual landscape photography.
Yes, yes, yes.
Which can be the challenge sometimes.
Yes.
But just getting things in order and using the magic of video to,
yes,
to bring it all together.
Yes, yes. I think it's a really wonderful thing to herald.
It's made me get out. It's made me get out more as well. Mm. I think more. Mm.
I used to say, and probably I think I stand by this, that the camera is the most wonderful conduit with which you can engage so profoundly with the landscape. In fact, I sometimes meet people from time to time who say, why do you have to photograph everything? And I say, I must. I absolutely must, because that's the only means I have of being able to engage so deeply with this miraculous world that we're part of.
Yeah.
And I think you only half look at something, but when you have the camera, you look at it completely. No, doesn't the shutter speed and your aperture and your ISO get in the way? No, it doesn't. That's second nature. The issue really is to engage fully with what you're photographing and then hopefully see a result that has parity with your emotional response.
I do quite a lot of long exposure photography, which I love because I like that sort of ethereal feel that it generates. Mm. But I did a video relatively recently about it, and someone commented saying that they don't like long exposure photography because it's not real to life, and I argued back on that one because I think it is. Mm. It's just what I like about long exposure is it still embodies everything I like about photography in grabbing that moment in time.
Mm.
It's just doing it in a way that's beyond our own perspective.
Yes.
So, because it's still capturing a moment in time.
Yes.
It's just capturing a large amount of time into that single frame still.
Yes.
So the camera's actually perceiving time in a different way to we do,
yes,
the way we do. Mm. However, it's still very natural.
Very much so.
And that happened. It's nothing manipulated about it. It's just showing a different perspective, really.
Yes. No, I'm all for it. It's quite interesting, the long exposure process, because you've all your 10 stoppers, your 5 stoppers, your 4 stoppers. And in the old money, we used to use a polarizer, which was a fatal thing, because a polarizer is designed to be a polarizer, not density, not pure density. And I remember thinking, you know, that long exposures were fine if the content was there without the long exposure.
Yeah.
So if the structure was there and the content was there, and the build was right, then you could just add that little bit of mystique.
I think I've definitely been guilty of that, of the opposite of that. So there's been times when I've thought, it's okay, I'm going to try and make it work with a long exposure, and then it doesn't really.
No, that's very honest of you.
Yeah, sometimes, maybe.
Mm. That's very, very honest
but
of you.
Not always.
Then, interestingly enough, it's very honest of you. The shutter speed's interesting, isn't it? Because the moment water turns into what I call an ice rink, or the inside of an oyster shell, and turns to sort of cream, when there's an area of real turbulence in the water, like a waterfall, that blowout just magnifies, doesn't it? It has no value at all. It's as Mr. Adams would say, it's zone 10. It's gone and irretrievable.
Mm.
And I think as long as water still kind of looks like water, I think that's absolutely fine. It's when it just becomes, you don't really know what it is, it just becomes uniform. But it's so really, I think when people do long exposures, I'm sure you would endorse this idea of having trial. So you go right the way through, you could do a 15th and 8th, right the way through, quarter, half, 1, 2, 4, 8, and then you later on analyse and you think, yeah, I'm glad I did that variety of shutter speeds, because if I hadn't, I wouldn't have this choice.
I think that's true. Like experimentation is a big part of it, isn't it? And really? Figuring out what works for you and what doesn't. I've got a friend who, when he talks about doing long exposures to smooth water out, I can't remember exactly what the shutter speed is, but you just bam, it's this every time. That's what you do.
Commits to it.
Yeah, because he knows that works for him. Like if he's shooting a waterfall, he just said, right, that's it every time.
But the velocity of the water tumbling over the rocks has a bearing on how fast it
does.
Yeah,
So I've played around with lots of things because there's a few long exposures I've done at the coast where I'll do it like, I don't know, 6 minutes or something. So you just, it's that totally flat, and then edit it to the point where it's just negative space to create, to put emphasis on the groins that are there or something like that.
Yes.
I quite like that. But
I do too. What I do find a bit interesting is the response of the viewer who feels that the image has been what I call over-engineered.
Mm.
And so in a way, the post-production has almost intruded upon the essence of the original piece. So I remember somebody saying you can cleanse, but you can over-cleanse until you refine and refine once more, and then until you've hardly got anything left of the original.
It's difficult to know where the line is, though, sometimes, I find. And I've solved that for myself by post-processing quickly.
Mm.
So I will spend maybe a minute on an image
and know when to stop,
and then just stop.
Yeah,
and then a lot of the time, that's all it needs.
Yes. Yes.
Whereas in my early days of starting to use Photoshop and stuff, I'd spend hours on it, like on one image, with dodging and burning, and then I'd literally spend the whole evening with a coffee or a glass of wine or something, editing this image. And then I'll look at it again in the morning and I'd be thinking, oh, my God, what is that?
Yes.
What have I done?
Yes. You killed it.
Yeah. Then you start all over again and do it in about a minute.
No, that's a very, very good point you make. That crossing the line business is, you just have to have, I always think that Photoshop should be used with integrity and restraint. And as you rightly said just then, you knew when to stop. So you had to start all over. But it's a wonderful tool. I mean, what do we do in the darkroom? We could get auto contrast paper, multiple grade paper, multi-grade, from zone one. I think it's not zone, but from grade one through to five. So we could play with contrast then. We could use what we call pot ferry, potassium ferricyanide, so we could bleach things. You know, we could dodge and burn. We could do a lot of those things. And if you look at the little chart in Photoshop, there are some of the old style things.
Yeah.
So really, I must say, I think I'd slightly draw the line, but that's personal. When you see a photograph and it's, let's say, somewhere in Yorkshire, and you say, it's a great sky, and the person who created it said, oh, well, now I did the sky in Mallorca, and I've stuck it onto Yorkshire.
Yeah.
And there's just something slightly unsettling about a sky in off the island of Mallorca.
Yeah.
After that scene.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of that. After the video I did about
about
the deception, I talked about, I kind of thought, am I, because people are saying it's all open in landscape photography, you can do whatever you want.
Yes.
And I was thinking, actually, yes, that's true. But so I was thinking then, it's the difference between, and I'm not, neither is right or wrong, but it's the difference between being, are you a landscape photographer or are you a photographer of the natural landscape?
Yes.
And I think I'm the latter on the whole.
Yes.
I'm both, obviously, but...
Yeah.
But
the digital revolution, as I think it was called, has allowed us to be able to produce an image that is just, maybe, we call it tweaked a bit, don't we, but refined so that it suits our artistic intention.
Mm.
And I think in the main most people will keep have that integrity.
Yeah.
Because they don't want to depart from their own human experience, particularly. And I think most people will do what you used to be able to do in the darkroom. I really do.
Mm.
I don't think much more. I don't think people really feel terribly great about importing an entire sky and plonking
it's not. I think when people do that, because some of the composites that people create, I really enjoy some of them, but it's not really a landscape photograph anymore. It's an image.
Yeah.
People do amazing things in Photoshop.
Don't they?
And I
very
like
talented.
And I like a lot of it, but it's something different, isn't it? It's not. It's not.
Yes. It's not any worse or any better.
No.
It's just, you know, each to his own.
Yeah. But I think with the way I do landscape photography, there's a certain integrity that I want to put across, as it were.
Mm.
That if you look at that image, you can trust me that's real and that's possible.
And it took place.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
And that's a great thing about making the vlogs, actually, is that people said, that's not real. I was like, well, yeah, it is. You can, here, look, watch the video.
Yes.
It's a copyright almost. Yes. Like, it's a proof of what happened.
Yes.
All the video can be manipulated as well, but I don't have those kind of skills.
No, I certainly don't. But what's particularly lovely for you and I, really, and it's important probably to say this, is that there are so many people now photographing everything. But I've discovered that over the years that most of their 350 million posts, I believe, on Facebook.
Is that what it is?
Per day.
Wow.
There are 85 in approximately million posts on Instagram per day. And here's the bit that I really like. A huge majority are of landscapes.
Mm.
Because people see something beautiful. Their immediate response is to own it. Their immediate response is to say, let's say there's a family in the car, who's got the camera?
Mm.
And out comes the camera. It doesn't matter what it is, a rainbow, some beautiful cloudscape, or what, doesn't matter what it is, but I wouldn't mind betting that pretty much most people travelling through any lovely landscape, be it where we are now in Yorkshire, they will use the word beautiful a few times. They'll say, oh, isn't that a beautiful tree? Isn't that a beautiful sky? Look at that beautiful hill. Whether they're photographers or not, and the desire to own it wholeheartedly is immense. And I think the large proportion of images that are made by people, be it Instagram or Facebook or whatever social media, is of landscape. So I think you and I are really happy about that, aren't we?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because we don't want to keep it to ourselves. Yeah. We want people to understand that it's hugely enriching and can bring a marvellous state of well-being to the individual who has executed the image, which you then feed on, not just that evening, but the next day and the next day. You keep looking at it, don't you? We all do. Everybody will know this experience. And you're able to say, I had that, I experienced that, and that means the world to me.
It's one of the things I appreciate with you as well, is that you've spent your whole career trying to share that experience with other people as well.
That's kind of you to say that.
And that's,
I don't want to keep it inside.
No, and I think you're doing that through, you do that through Light and Land, and I think you do it through Landscape Photographer of the Year as well, because it's, I think the competitions are good for just celebrating photography and landscape photography, and it's just it's fantastic.
I'm glad you mentioned Light and Land and Landscape Photography of the Year, because they mean a great deal to me, really. Yeah. They really do. And I think all of the leaders, and you will now know, that when you're guiding somebody and assisting them in the process of perception, never mind the technical, but just to really truly see all the component parts, all the ingredients, a bit like a cook, you know, a bit of this and a bit of that and a bit of this, and then moulding them together so they become a cohesive whole, a sound and cohesive whole. And then for your student to suddenly get it and just say, oh, that's marvellous, thank you for that. It, you know, it means an enormous amount. And with Landscape Photographer of the Year, for people to have got out and committed themselves, you know, to producing a photograph that they then enter into the award, and then they get a, you know, fairly nice bit of prize money, but more than that, they are able to say, I did that. I made that image, and I did what I had to do, and I sent it in, and I've seen the finished result. And I'm, especially for young people, I will never forget one of the young winners one year, 2010, I think, virtually in tears, looking at their image at Waterloo Station. And it was 60 foot long, because it was on the motion at Waterloo, which is what it's called, that big screen.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm looking forward to it coming out again, you know, next year.
It's really changed some people's lives as well, hasn't it,
for some
of the winners.
Kind of you to say that.
Yeah.
I like to think it has.
I think I've told you this before, but I've had a few people say to me that they will tailor their year's shooting around trying to create some images to submit to Landscape Photographer of the Year.
Oh, that's marvellous.
So they'll go out and think they want to show different sections and not into the different categories. And
yes.
So they'll go out and try and tailor things around that.
I didn't know that. Oh, yeah. That's absolutely yeah. wonderful. That really, really is.
Yeah.
But I'm pleased younger people are now, you know, coming away from, you know, the TV and getting out. Because we know that we have to engage with the outside world. We absolutely know. Because there isn't anything else. And I think, you know, we're so dislocated from the outside world and from nature. And you and I will be fascinated by anything. You know, I was looking at a centipede the other day, and I thought that's just a thing of great wonder, you know, and it's sacred almost, this incredible little creature. And it may sound a bit absurd, but a bee landed on my cheek the other day, and I thought, this may seem completely weird, but I thought that was such a privilege for a bee to land on my cheek. And I'm not trying to say I was heroic, I wasn't frightened, why would it sting me? And after a while, you know, it flew away. Mm. But that, I will never forget that moment, it tickled a bit, but it was, you know, it wasn't anything I was worried about. So we're surrounded with little mini miracles everywhere, and all you and I and our landscape photographer friends, of which there are many, all we want to do is harness our amazement and our wonder and relish it.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
You know, like that, I love the shape in the hills over there now as well.
Yes, look at that. Marvellous.
One thing, talking about landscape photography of the year, one thing I'd love to see, I'm not suggesting you should do this unless you want to, but one thing I would love to see is how the judging process works.
Yes.
So people have an understanding of what you're looking for or yes. what you... even if you've got... Is it 12 judges you have?
Yes, I think that between 10 and 12.
Even if you have, like... Even if you could see the judges discussing some images just to give people an idea of of what you're looking for and what people's feelings are about a particular image.
Yes.
That's certainly something I'd like to see.
We have thought about that a lot. We really have.
It just gives that extra bit of transparency
for
people to understand that it's not fixed or anything daft like that.
Oh, Lord, no. I mean, it's worth saying that it is a tortuous process and everybody makes their own private decisions. It's a very, very interesting point. And yes, the last thing we want is to be thought of as being, you know, secretive.
Mm.
But as they say, I will definitely take that on board.
Yeah.
Definitely. But thank you for...
It's by no means a criticism. I just think it's just something that I'd love to see.
Yes, because the analysis of a photograph is a really fascinating process, isn't it? Well, I mean, what is it within the image that makes the viewer arrive after a very short time indeed with a favourable response or an unfavourable? A very short time, I mean, like a second. I mean, it is really fascinating. And that gasp, and you say, oh, that's marvellous.
Yes.
You know, and it's just incredible. And they've seen it for less than a second.
We were talking about it, my time in the police earlier, weren't we? And one of the things I did was do the driving.
Yes.
So when I was learning how to do my advanced driving, there would be three students in the car and one driver. And they, when you're behind the wheel and you've got the instructor to your left, it's just so intense and your concentration is just off the scale.
Yes.
And it's not always that easy to soak up what you're doing. And then, so they'll ask you, like, at the end of the drive, they'll think, what do you think of that? And I'll be like, I've literally got no idea what happened because it's just, it all happened so fast.
Yes.
So, but when you're the passenger, then this gets to the crux of my point. When you're the passenger in the back, you learn possibly, potentially more than you do when you're actually behind the wheel because you're seeing somebody else do it.
Yes.
You're seeing somebody else being taught.
Yes.
And I think that's the same is true for photography critique. Like if you've submitted an image or you're asking for critique, it's like when we have those sessions on the Light and Land tours.
Yes.
Hearing what people think about other people's work, you can directly apply that to your own work.
Yes, that's a good, I like that outlook. I agree.
So I think it's really helpful.
Yeah. Any analysis is really good, isn't it? In-depth analysis of anything. So that then we can arrive at a greater understanding. Mm,
definitely.
It's raining heavy.
It's raining quite heavily now.
Look at the light on the limestone pavement.
It's fantastic, isn't it?
Yeah. So it's turned from a mid-grey right up to whatever.
A shimmer.
Yeah.
Anyway, Charlie, thank you so much for today
and coming
on my channel. I'll give you a hug.
Yeah, come on, a man hug. A wet man hug.
Thanks so much.
Very good. You're welcome.
Yeah, so that was the conversation with Charlie I had a little while ago. I would just like to say thanks for listening. Thanks for your support, whether it's on YouTube, on the Raw Room, or if you come along as a client on a workshop. I hope I have some kind of interaction with you very, very soon, whether that's online, on the phone or whatever, or in person. So it's just great to be able to speak to you all. And yeah, like I said, I will speak to you, see you very, very soon.